Okay, hi everybody, and we're going on to externalization of the hierarchy, program 55. These are a collection of essays by Master DK, and they've been put together into a book called Externalization of the Hierarchy. Now, we've been talking about the three very important full moons of April, May, and June in the year 1945 as the war was coming to an end. And the release of those forces, which we call the forces of restoration, the forces of enlightenment, and the forces of reconstruction. Now, here we are in April the 17th, and so presumably the other writing took place before, and this is still in the sign Aries. So maybe the Easter celebration has occurred, that one had occurred, and the May and June celebrations had not occurred. So what we have here is the idea that the tropical Aries was in effect, and in effect before this date. And then the spirit of resurrection, that was discussed in the March letter. And the letter that focused upon March, a great extraplanetary being, but at this point under the direction of the Christ. So here we are, April 17th, 1945, and we are discussing the great invocation, the one I think that we are familiar with, the third, excuse me, the third stanza. Okay, as this world catastrophe draws to its inevitable close, it is inevitable at this point, at least, how it will go, and the forces of light triumph over the forces of evil. Notice one of them is capitalized and the other is not. The time of restoration opens up. Restoration, the forces of restoration found in relation to Aries, during which this letter is being written. For each of you, this indicates a renewed time of service and of activity. I'll bring this down just a little bit here. I send you herewith the final stanza of the great invocation as I promised. And this is the one with which we are familiar, most familiar at this time anyway, from the point of light within the mind of God, etc. So, I gave you the first about 9 years ago, 1935, 36, and the second during the course of the war, which I think the date, or at least the year, was 1940. I would ask you to use it daily and as many times a day as you can remember to do so. You will thus create a seed thought or a clear-cut thought form, which will make the launching of this invocation among the masses of men a successful venture when the right time comes, and that time is not yet. So basically, to his groups, to his disciple, I guess, disciples, I think he's talking to the members of the new seed group, and he's talking to those who were gathered in New York for the ashram work. But to the general public, the release is not yet. And this is, at least it came out under the date, April 17th, 1945, and probably it was written before that time. As Alice Beatty once said, you astrologers don't try to make too much of it because there's always a delay here. And the date itself does not tell you necessarily when it was received, probably not. So the great invocation can be expressed in the following words. And I'll simply read them. We are so familiar with them. And work has been done upon them to try to interpret the individual, the planetary, the extraplanetary, even the cosmic meaning of these words. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. The purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Now, there have been various other renditions of this put forward, and one relatively recently by the Lucis Trust, and it tends to use the word human, human hearts, and so forth. I don't know that the Tibetan would object against it. He did even suggest that the word masters, the plural, be reduced to the master, meaning the Christ, when being used with a Christian audience. So some find that amendment and, you know, the coming one and so forth, a term which he uses frequently, is in the newer invocation. I know there has been some numerological work on this invocation by the late John Burgess, and he found it to be very significant in the form given. But I think the idea is the important thing. And so those who wish to retain the original wording, that's fine. Those who, like the Lucis Trust, seek to offer some new ideas that I would say does not leave women out of the picture, even though it represents, on the part of many who feel left out, a misunderstanding of man and manas. Well, that's okay too, I think. The Tibetan goes on to say it has been difficult to translate into understandable and adequate phrases the very ancient word forms which the Christ will employ. These word forms are only seven in number, and they will constitute his complete new utterance, so that when he reappears, this great invocation will be a word of power of tremendous importance. I have only been able to give their general significance. Nothing else was possible, but even in this longer form, they will be potent in their invocative appeal. If said with mental intensity and ardent purpose. Well, now 75 years, it's been 75 years since this invocation was released. And it has gone all over the world, and it's been translated into not all the languages of the world, but into many of them, certainly in the languages used in the larger countries. The points of emphasis upon which I would ask you to dwell, once it is permissible to use the phrases, I suppose among the general public, are two in number. And number one, may Christ return to earth. And of course, this sounds like a very Christian statement. This return must not be understood in its usual connotation and its well-known mystical Christian sense. Christ has never left the earth. So this is something that has to be realized by the faithful in the Christian church. Christ has never left the earth. What is referred to is the externalization of the hierarchy and its exoteric appearance on earth, something that is not generally emphasized in the Christian church. The hierarchy will eventually, under its head, the Christ, function openly and visibly on earth. And this will happen when the purpose of the divine will and the plan which will implement it is better understood, and the period of adjustment, of world enlightenment, and of reconstruction has made real headway. So it looks like adjustment is associated with the forces of restoration and, of course, enlightenment and reconstruction by their definite and appropriate names. The forces are named thusly. This period began at the San Francisco Conference. Hence its major importance, and will move very slowly at first. It will take time, but the hierarchy thinks not in terms of years and of brief cycles, though long to humanity, but in terms of events and the expansion of consciousness. Okay. So may Christ return to earth, a major word of power, which has to be understood in terms of the externalizing hierarchy and, of course, the externalizing Christ, and in terms of the three great types of forces which will be released: restoration, enlightenment, and reconstruction. And at this writing, one of them has been released. Okay. The next important phrase, may it seal the door where evil dwells. The sealing up of the evil forces released during this war will take place within the immediate future. It will be soon. Now, what do we mean by soon? 75 years have passed, and I think pretty obviously to all who think about it, there has been, again, a last-ditch effort on the part of these forces. The evil referred to has nothing to do with the evil inclinations, the selfish instincts, and the separativeness found in the hearts and minds of human beings. It's something, you know, much worse. And, you know, that has more to do with planetary evil, as here discussed, but not with cosmic evil, let us say. These must be overcome, and these they must overcome and eliminate for themselves. But the reduction, okay, I'm going to just make that again. But the reduction to impotency of the loosed forces of evil, which took advantage of the world situation, which obsessed the German people, you know, with their Pisces personality sign, and directed the Japanese people. Perhaps direction is a little less worse than obsession, and which worked through barbarity, murder, sadism, lying propaganda, and which prostituted science to achieve their ends, requires the imposition of a power beyond the human. So, you know, again, we see that without the help of hierarchy, humanity could not withstand these forces of not just planetary evil, but of cosmic evil, even as it did appear in the period. We're told of the French kings and in the Roman period, and now again in this period of the Second World War, particularly. This must be invoked. This power to help offset these powers of militant cosmic evil. This must be invoked, and the invocation will meet with speedy response. These evil potencies will be occultly sealed within their own place. It's pretty much on the astral plane, but mental plane too, and etheric, i.e. within the personality of the planetary logos, even though they are found more rooted in the cosmic astral plane. These evil potencies will be occultly sealed within their own place. What this exactly means has not to do with humanity. Men today must learn the lessons of the past, profit from the discipline of the war, and deal, each in his own life and community, with the weaknesses and errors to which he may find himself prone. I mean, this is the building of normal good character out of the planetary ignorance which leads to planetary evil. This men can handle and must handle, but as Moria seems to say, I'll paraphrase, you trouble yourself over a few minor demons while the daggers of Satan are aimed at our backs. So Satan here is not the solar angels. It is a deliberate negative power to prevent the divine plan, and stemming out of maybe the original sin, it might be called in Christianity, of the human personality. So some people have criticized the Great Invocation because, being somewhat psychologically trained, they know that if you seal unconscious contents away so you can't reach them, they can do much worse than if they're brought to light. But here it's simply a question of whether humanity could handle these forces, and by itself, it could not. Now here he's asking us to recall what he said last year anent this final stanza of the invocation. An invocation for power and light, and of course love is included, but in the original sort of title of it, it's an invocation for power and light. And he has said, I am preparing to present to you for wide distribution throughout the world the last stanza of the great invocation. So the various verses constitute one stanza. It is by no means easy to translate the words of this stanza in terms which will make it of general appeal and not simply importance, of importance to convinced esotericists. So he really has to think in terms of humanity's absorption of the words to this ancient mantra, truly ancient. It can be, and you know, esotericists must reach out, as he instructed them to do, and cannot be satisfied with the idea that they understand, but others don't. And now many understand. It can be so presented that the masses everywhere, the general public, will be prompted to take it up and will use it widely. They will do this on a relatively larger scale, when the intuitional, the spiritually minded, or even the men of goodwill, you know, they're in descending order, I suppose. They will do this on a relatively larger scale than will these spiritual types. A far wider public will comprehend it. I will give AAB this stanza at the earliest possible moment. This will be conditioned by world affairs and by my understanding of a certain esoteric appropriateness in the setting of a time cycle. So the masses are meant to take it up. And, you know, those with some spiritual, benevolent, goodwill orientation are meant to take it up. And they will do so widely, even more widely than will the esotericists and those who possess the intuition and spiritual knowledge. It will be on a wider scale. We're talking about the past now because this invocation has certainly made its appearance and spread widely. If plans mature as desired by the hierarchy, the new stanza can receive distribution at the time of the full moon of June, 1945, you know, Gemini, the head of the cosmic Christ, as it's called, as far as the Occident is concerned, and considerably later for the Orient. Maybe, you know, he foresaw what would happen in relation to China and Tibet and the reign of Mao, the materialism of it, and so forth. Prior to these set points in time, the stanza can be used by all esoteric school members after being used for one clear month by my group, dating that month from the time that the most distant members of the group receive it. So even the timing of the giving out of this invocation had to receive special attention and had to be governed by an understanding of cycles. and when the release would be most effective. I seek to have this invocation go forth on the power generated by my ashram, Master DK speaking, and by all of you affiliated with my ashram. Now he's talking about the group of 24 and the ashramic group in New York. The ashrams of the Master KH and the Master M are likewise deeply committed to participation in this work. And he differentiates, we see, his ashram from Master KH's ashram, even though his ashram is, in a way, within Master KH's ray ashram, the second ray. I would ask you also to read and reread the two instructions which you are at this time receiving, one dealing with the cycle of conferences and the other with the work of the Christ. So we're talking about here the reappearance of the Christ, that book, and chapter 4. Master their contents, and let the blueprint of the hierarchical plan take shape in your minds. Then you can do your share in implementing it and will be able to recognize those who in other groups and in different lands are also a vital part of the hierarchical effort. And, you know, the bringing together of the members of the many groups who are oriented towards the uplift of humanity, though using different methods, is for the Tibetan, as he has said, a very important matter. Now, 1945, the release of the great invocation in its third and now most used form, most used stanza, with its four verses particularly. And this does not mean that from time to time, the 1935-36 version and the 1940 version, or stanzas, are not used. They are used, and they have still tremendous power. And even the one that was used in the middle of the war, the 1940 version, invokes the forces of death in the positive sense to put to an end the stifling of consciousness and the victory of those associated with the Black Lodge, the Lords of Form. So from time to time, the use of these other stanzas is really important. I've set them actually to music with the help of my colleague Harold Moses, and some people will find it useful, those musical renditions. As far as the great invocation that we are mostly familiar with, which is the third stanza, many people have attempted, just as I attempted, to set the words to music. And, you know, music has a way of entering the consciousness and inspiring, perhaps most effectively. Now, we about a half hour is completed in this particular program, program 55, interesting how the number 55 is the numerological result of the word sanat, Always found that. And of course, it sums to the number one, to the 10, to the one. And he is the great representative of Shambhala. Well, here is a very controversial essay, and some reading it will not understand and will even refuse to understand because it seems in some ways inhumane, considering the loss of form that occurred. But I do think it broke the myopic grip which had Japan in its clutches. So let's see what he has to say. This is written on August 9th, and I think I'll have to look that up. I think Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the bombing of Nagasaki. And, okay, so let's see here. This is one of those moments when I'm not really going to change the screen. Bombing of Nagasaki and the date, which was August 9th, indeed. And I heard an interesting thing that it was not Nagasaki that was the intended target, but a default target, when the originally intended target could not be reached. Well, it did break the resistance and, according to some estimates, saved millions of lives, at least a million American lives that an invasion in the classical sense would have entailed. Okay. And so he says some unusual things here. I know when I first read it, I thought it was a highly unusual essay. But let's see if we can gather his point of view. So from 488, we have reached page 491. Actually, yes, page 491. I would like at this time to touch upon the greatest spiritual event which has taken place since the fourth kingdom of nature, the human kingdom, appeared. You know, right away he's going to offend many of a pacifistic frame of mind. I refer to the release of atomic energy, as related in the newspaper this week, August 6, 1945, in connection with the bombing of Japan. So immediately he has our attention, because this is maybe an unusual way of presenting this event as the greatest spiritual event since the appearance of the human kingdom on this earth. Some years ago, I told you that the new era would be ushered in by the scientists of the world, and that the inauguration of the kingdom of God on earth would be heralded by means of successful scientific investigation. Well, maybe the readers of that would not have suspected a bomb or something of its tremendous destructive magnitude. By this first step in the releasing of the energy of the atom, this has been accomplished. First step. And my prophecy has been justified during this momentous year of our Lord. Why does he talk about it that way? Maybe because it's Christ's great occasion. The momentous year of our Lord, 1945. He could have simply said the momentous year. But the Christ played a tremendous sacrificial role during this year, 1945. Let me make one or two statements anent this discovery, leaving you to make your own application and deductions. Little as to the true nature of this happening is as yet known, and still less is understood. Certain ideas and suggested thoughts may be of real value and enable you to see this stupendous event in better perspective. You know, he's going to basically talk about the death blow to materialism. And you would think there's plenty of materialism still demonstrating, but its support has been undermined entirely. And it's only a matter of time before the etheric plane is cognized as real, and people realize that material perception, though necessary when dealing with the outer world, is fundamentally illusory. So, point number one, it was the imminence of this release of energy which was one of the major subjective factors in the precipitation of the last phase of the war. It was a release, in accordance with the formula which Einstein wrested from the universal mind. And of course, as is so often the case, the first application is destructive. The World War started in 1914, but its last and most important phase began in 1939. We're on page 492. Up to then, it was a world war. After that date, and because the forces of evil took advantage of the state of war and belligerency existing on the planet, the real war began, involving the entire three worlds of human evolution and a consequent activity of the hierarchy. So let's see how we do this. Man's attention is normally focused on the externalities of living. Nevertheless, all great discoveries, such as those made in connection with astronomy or in relation to the laws of nature or involving the revelation of radioactivity or the epoch-making event announced this week concerning the first steps taken in the harnessing of cosmic energy, are ever the result of inner pressure emanating from the forces and lives in high places. So he's trying to say that this great outer shocking event, against which Japan was warned, but probably the warning met with disbelief. The warning was ignored. He's trying to say that from high places came the impulse, which worked out in that astonishing event. Such inner pressures themselves function under the law of the spirit, and not just under what you would call natural laws. They are the result of the impelling work of certain great lives, working in connection with the third aspect of divinity, that of active intelligence, and are concerned with the substance of matter aspect, with the substance or matter aspect of manifestation. So great lives were behind this type of release of atomic energy. Such activities are motivated from Shambhala. The activity is set in motion by these lives, the lights that carry out the will of God. These lives, working on their high plane, and it gradually causes a reaction in the various departments of the hierarchy, particularly those working under the third, fifth, and seventh ray masters. And you would think, you know, that the first ray masters would also be involved here, as there was so much destruction. But the intelligence aspect is working through the third, fifth, and seventh rays. Eventually, disciples upon the physical levels of activity become aware of the inner ferment, and this happens either consciously or unconsciously. They become impressed, and the scientific work is then started and carried through into the stages of experimentation and final success. Well, Einstein picked it up, coming from these inner sources, and he wrote a letter to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who recognized the urgency of what was being stated, and the Manhattan Project began in New Mexico. I lived in New Mexico for some time and visited some of these sites where building work on the bomb was being conducted. And then, of course, the Alamogordo was the place of release. And I think, you know, Oppenheimer, a brilliant man, when he saw the release from a distance, of course, he spoke of Shiva and the Lord of Destruction. He had learned Sanskrit in a short time, and so saw the connection between the ancient gods of power and what was happening on the planet. But we have to understand that if the secrets of making the bomb had fallen into the hands of the Germans, and they were close, or the Japanese, they were not so close, then the fate of humanity would have been entirely different, and whatever freedoms that we now possess would have been destroyed. One point should here be remembered, and that is that this phase applies to both the Great White Lodge and the Black Lodge. He capitalizes them here. The one dedicated to the beneficent task of purifying and aiding all lives in the three worlds of material evolution and to the release of the soul in form, and the other to the retardation of the evolutionary process and to the continuous crystallizing of the material forms which hide and veil the anima mundi, i.e. the soul of the world. There are various phrases where it discusses the intention of the Black Lodge to enslave humanity, and even the capturing of the released essence by occult means that DK does not really elaborate. Both groups have been profoundly interested and implicated in this matter of the release of energy from the atom and the liberation of its inner aspect. But their motives and objectives were widely different. So from high places, both good and apparently evil, came an impulsion towards the externalizing of the secrets of atomic energy, even 2,000 years ahead of time. Somewhere DK talks about the age of Capricorn as being the planned time of release of this information and release of the use of this energy. But the fifth ray ashram penetrated rapidly into the secrets, and it was a dire race between two groups of workers. The Lords of Liberation were told deflected in a manner that DK could not describe or would not describe the necessary knowledge away from the consciousness, the mind of the groups that serve the Black Lodge. And apparently they allowed the allies and the team of the Manhattan Project to grasp these secrets, even though it was ahead of time and dangerous in that respect. Humanity right now is not morally capable of possessing those secrets, and DK warned at the time that only certain countries could be trusted with the secrets and with the bomb, so to speak. Now others, nations which cannot be trusted, at least according to his estimate, have the nuclear capability. So hierarchy has a difficult balancing act before it, to make sure there is no final explosion which will set humanity back to its origins, to see whether there might not be raised up a truer humanity in conformity with the divine plan. So a race was on. And given the weaponry that is possible, a race is still on. I was reading even today that certain lasers now can be effective in taking down airplanes. I don't know about rockets, but the laser technology is here to destroy and to be used militarily. And so it seems that even though the fifth ray ashram has been, or had been at least, temporarily in abeyance, with the fifth ray working under the third ray rather than more independently, that the danger of discovering secrets of nature too fast is still with us. So anyway, we have the precipitation of the last phases of the Great War. And further then, well, these are the ideas and thoughts which may be of real value here and enable us to see this stupendous event in better perspective. We're quite used to the idea now. And the hydrogen bomb was invented shortly after the atomic bomb, and we have bombs today that make what was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki look like firecrackers. So we have weapons of tremendous destructive power, and it's only getting more destructive as the research continues. All of this has to be held in abeyance. Otherwise, there will be that explosion if the world is left as an armed camp, and it will mean the destruction of humanity as we know it, and it will mean that a whole new human race has to be started again. And DK says this is a possibility that can be envisioned, meaning it's not an impossibility. Okay. So when people say, yes, it was the Armageddon then, it is very likely. I know the Agni Yoga people insist on that, even though some of the Christians look forward to a different kind of Armageddon, which still looms ahead. And it's still not the judgment day, which is critical for the sacredness of this planet and lies, I think, millions of years ahead in the fifth round. Is it a chain round? Is it a scheme round? You know, that still has to be ascertained. And now, number two, the imminence of this release, inevitable and under direction. I guess the hierarchy decided this is the way we must go. We are taking sides on the part of the allies because it's more in line with the divine plan, and the other is inimical to the divine plan. The imminence of this release, inevitable and under direction, produced an enormous tension in hierarchical circles because, to express the idea colloquially, a race was on between the dark forces and the forces of light to acquire possession of the techniques necessary to bring about this liberation of needed energy. Yeah. The race was on, and without the intervention of the Lords of Liberation, who responded to even the inchoate demand of humanity that reached them, where would we be now? Because certainly the Axis powers would not have hesitated to use such destructive mechanisms on the Allied nations. Had the dark forces triumphed and had the Axis powers obtained possession of the needed scientific formulas, it would have led to a major planetary disaster. But, you know, they did not, and it was not just the intervention of hierarchy and of the Lords of Liberation. Humanity also played its demanding, invocative part. The released energy would have been used first of all to bring about the complete destruction of all opposing the forces of evil. And then it would have been prostituted to the preservation of an increasingly materialistic and non-idealistic civilization. Germany could not be trusted with this power, for all her motives were compellingly wrong. You know, it's such an irony that a country that has produced, I think, the greatest musicians in the world, and great philosophers and so forth, great poets, under their fourth ray, could, under their first ray personality, be at such variance with what the God of this planet intends. It's a real split. But now, following the war, following some very good leadership in Germany, things are correcting themselves. Whether it will be possible that an occult school appears there, as it is said to be slated to appear in all significant nations, remains to be seen. Because DK, at least when he was writing, he referred to Germany as that unhappy land or country, something of that nature. You might here fall back on the trite religious platitude that the innate good in humanity and mankind's inherent divinity would eventually have triumphed, because naught can finally overcome the universal trend towards good. Now, you know, real enemies of progress are found among the sweet and sentimental idealists who love the form more than the inner God, the inner principles, the inner soul. You are prone to forget, says DK, that if the evil forces possess potencies which can destroy form in the three worlds on such a large scale, that the souls of advanced aspirants and disciples and those of initiates seeking incarnation cannot come into outer expression during the particular world crisis, a particular world crisis, then you have direly affected the time schedule of the evolutionary process. And, you know, DK writes of the time-space schedule of the planetary logos. It doesn't mean that the logos has not transcended time in the usual sense as humanity conceives it, but simply that there is a outer timing which has to be correlated with the outer timing of the various members of the solar system. And it would be a great setback in that timing. And the timing is important because if it I think I've often said that it may be possible for the solar logos of this system to take the fifth initiation still in this particular solar system, but not unless the Earth can play its role as the base of the spine center, which is the center most involved in the fifth initiation. So you will have greatly delayed, perhaps for millennia of years, thousands, the manifestation of the kingdom of God. Now, He does talk about a delay in Esoteric Psychology 1, writing back in the 30s, and he talks about 300 years as a possibility of delay, and now he's speaking of thousands of years. The time had come for that manifestation, the kingdom of God, and hence the powerful activity of the dark forces. Yeah. Trying to prevent the great developments which were slated, which were intended. And this time, he increases the estimate. I'll have to remember that, so will you, perhaps for millions of years. Not millions, but millennia, hence thousands of years. We expect the coming of the kingdom of God to occur in the age of Aquarius. If thousands of years were involved, how many of these equinoctial ages would we have to endure before the kingdom of God could manifest? Well, the outcome of the war pretty much decided that, and the Aquarian Age could be entered in the proper manner. I think we've gone about an hour, but I'm going to try to make up for lost time, as yesterday I had the unfortunate experience of losing about an hour's worth of work and about 2 hours worth of time. Don't press the wrong button, as I must have done. The attempt to hinder the planned progress constituted a definite menace and indicated a supreme danger and problem, you know, maybe throwing off the progress of the entire solar system significantly. So interesting to read TK's point of view on these things. And there'll be more of that, I'm sure, as he does some historical retrospective regarding the 75, 80 years that will have passed when, again, he begins to write around the year 2025. He doesn't get too specific. The evil forces were closer to success than any of you have ever dreamed. They were so close to success in 1942 that there were 4 months when the members of the spiritual hierarchy had made every possible arrangement to withdraw from human contact for an indefinite period and indefinite and unforeseen period of time. Now, some people wonder if the hierarchy had chosen sides, why they would be withdrawing from contact with humanity. Well, they certainly wouldn't have been planning in this way unless it was for the welfare of the planet and the plan. I don't think we can know or understand the reason why the withdrawal was necessary. Maybe karmic factors are involved, you know, that humanity has to suffer the consequences of its own decisions. It was driven back before the hierarchy was, or made the decision after the Atlantean War that humanity had to be left to its own devices. It had been emerging, coming closer and closer, but it would have been necessary to withdraw and let the forces of karma play out, perhaps, maybe whatever the hierarchy had as a reason would have been justified and would have been filled with beneficence and the impossibility of carrying on forward in the customary manner. The plans for a closer contact with the evolutionary process in the three worlds and the effort to blend and fuse these two divine centers, hierarchy and humanity, into one working, collaborating whole seemed doomed to destruction. Even those who were in the hierarchy thought so, which is astonishing. They could not see the way clear, and they felt humanity would go down to its destruction. And that's a chilling thought, that we were so close to annihilating the beneficent possibilities which now loom ahead of us, and so close to retrogression, reversion, and the need to reestablish a new humanity. Now, so hierarchy and humanity, it had been intended that they would fuse and blend. Their fusion would have meant the appearance of the kingdom of God on earth. The obstacles to this fusion, owing to the active tension of the dark forces, seemed at times insuperable. These are some of the hardest paragraphs to read when we realize how close to disaster we came. Probably it was immediately before the incarnation of many who will read this book and listen to these commentaries. We believed that man would go down to defeat, owing to his selfishness and his misuse of the principle of free will, and we made all preparations to withdraw, and yet at the same time, we struggled to get humanity to choose rightly and to see the issues clearly. So there was no willing abandonment, and up to the very last possible moment, the hierarchy would have been working to encourage humanity to choose aright. It's amazing how little the human race knows, how little awareness they have of these inner determinations which would change everything in the way humanity conducted itself and in terms of its possibilities. Well, then, you know, comes the good news. Probably many of us have read this a number of times. Was it beneficence? Was it occult law? Because the hierarchy will not do that which is lawful, unlawful, no matter how well intended may be the hierarchical group. It cannot break the law without consequence. The Buddha, in a sense, chose incorrectly and to remain with earth service, which we hear was not his path at all, out of premature compassion, perhaps. The planetary logos released a great elemental entity on the moon chain because of premature compassion. And those missteps do not go without consequences. The necessity to withdraw was averted. I may not say in what manner. You know, we have to understand that the Black Lodge is always trying to find out the detail of the divine plan, so that it can be more successful in the thwarting of that plan. I may not say in what manner, beyond telling you that the Lords of Liberation took certain unexpected steps, unexpected by hierarchy, with all of its knowledge. It must have been a terrible time for them who had tried so hard to save, to rescue humanity. I also feel that when the Christ made his decision in the Garden of Gethsemane, he saw these current decisions and the kind of fate that could await humanity unless he entered into a very difficult commitment to remain with humanity and to pass through in the flesh the process of the Aquarian Age. Anyway, the Lords of Liberation took certain unexpected steps. These are very high beings. I suspect they are, at least in terms of their functioning on our planet, they are shambolic beings. This they were led to do owing to the invocative powers of humanity used consciously by all those upon the side of the will to good and unconsciously by all men of good will. Well, humanity had to play its part. And without the invocative power of humanity, that even this type of salvation, no matter how well-intended the Lords of Liberation were, could not have worked out. Owing to these steps, says the Tibetan, the efforts of those fighting in the realm of science, notice battling there even, for the establishment of true knowledge and right human relations were aided. And, you know, who would suspect that help came from those inner sources, except, you know, for the feeling that one is being somehow supported by inner energies that the sensitive might have felt. The trend of the power to know and to discover a definite form of energy, it seems very connected with the fifth ray, was deflected away from the demanding, evocative minds of those seeking to destroy the world of men, leading to a form of mental paralysis. This is so interesting. So the mentality, the psychology of those who were demanding the power and knowledge to destroy these people were not allowed to know, and that was considered to be a legitimate way of proceeding according to the law. So there were very accomplished workers on the side of the Axis who could wrest from the divine mind its secrets, but a deflecting mechanism was applied, and probably it caused great strain among the would-be knowers and the impossibility of reaching the formulas, and even if formulas were known, the impossibility of packaging the implications in a bomb. I'm recalling in the Manhattan Project, there were so many attempts made to really carry the necessary chain reaction, and they were unsuccessful until they were successful. Sometimes, just like a little child, we don't know anything about the help that comes from our parent. But unlike the parents, the hierarchy feels itself constrained to follow the laws which come from Sirius and from the great, from the Blue Lodge there, or still greater White Lodge. So those seeking to emphasize the right values and to save humanity were simultaneously stimulated to the point of success. And I imagine that all of this occurred in 1942. Mental paralysis was the result, a psychologically and mentally abnormal state. They couldn't move their minds in the direction of the true knowledge. But it was lawfully done, and humanity did play its part, and the conscious invokers among the new group of world servers and the men and women of goodwill did play their part. Okay, in these very few words, I have disposed of a stupendous world event. And in this brief paragraph, I have summed up the working out of specialized divine activity. Well, you know, we can see that Master DK is not a sweet sentimentalist. He realizes the horrific loss of form and the suffering. Whatever Japan's karma is with respect to radiation, it must be quite strong. First of all, the two bombs, and then later the Fukushima tragedy under the tidal wave, and the, you know, contaminating so many people with radiation, and the escape of that radiation into the ocean and its movement to other countries. Japan has something to do with experiencing the effects of the radiation. And we don't know yet, we, that is, what it is. So the war was, well, at least it was not necessary for hierarchy to withdraw. And the race was on. Well, this has to be read and reread before it can be really assimilated, because it's so different from the way we normally think. We are so form biased that when the form suffers, we suffer. And we suffer for those for whom the form is suffering. We do not consider so much the inner man and the much more consequential type of suffering under benighted conditions. Okay, then point number three. And when we were dealing with point number two, it was... the race. The race that was on. And I think point number one was all about let's see here in a moment. Simply the release of the energy and the great event as DK conceives it to be. Now, it's not necessarily wrong that people don't want that to occur again. I mean, it was a lesson should be learned and the tremendous suffering involved. Those who died quickly were the lucky ones, and many people carried radiation poisoning for many years and then, you know, slowly died. You've seen some photographs of the suffering people. But we do know that on our planet, the factor of justice through karma works out. We don't know how, because it takes a special kind of understanding of a special kind of mathematics to deal with that. And the very highest group that take the path of absolute sonship, at least before the two new paths were added, we don't know what they are, they had to be experts in mathematical calculation of a kind that would reveal exactly the karma that was due. So one day we will know why it was that Japan has such a connection with the destructive use of radiation. So point three, when the sun moved northward that year, 1942, the Great White Lodge knew that the battle had been won. Namely, that the war had been won. We didn't know that. The Stalingrad battle was still lying ahead, or was raging, and anything could have happened there, but there was a slow deterioration of the effectiveness of the German forces, and the entire Sixth Army was captured, and General von Paulus, he was captured. And this was a huge disappointment for Germany, and those who were in the know knew that the end was inevitable. How long it would take to unwind, maybe they didn't know. It took about 2.5 years. So anyway, the sun moved northward, and the Great White Lodge knew that the battle had been won. And not just by, I think the Russian armies were very instrumental in this, and although he was a very gruff man, this General Sukhov, he was instrumental in capturing the German Sixth Army. Their preparations were halted, the preparations to leave, and the masters then organized for renewed effort through their disciples to bring about those conditions wherein that which was new and that which was in line with loving divine purpose could freely move forward. Apparently, you know, under the law of economy, when you realize that energy is going to be wasted, you cannot allow that to happen. And that's precisely what was imminent, at least in the consideration of the hierarchy before the intervention of the Lords of Liberation, liberty, equality, and fraternity. And it was those, the Lord of Liberty particularly, that was involved. It's a Uranianly inspired Lord. Equality coming through Libra, and fraternity through Gemini and through Mercury. The war was not won by the surrender of Germany. That was only the outer result of inner happenings. The war was won by the forces of light when the mental potency of the energy forces of evil was overcome and the energy of the future was directed or impelled by those who were seeking the higher human values and the spiritual good of mankind. Well, this is just such a different point of view. The historians, unless they are esoteric historians or esoterically inclined, will not write in this way. So the war was won internally, and the outworking was inevitable. The surrender of Germany was the tail end of a process of disintegration which had been, at least in part, engineered by the forces of light. And it is said that the forces of light won the war, looking at the sources as the true victors. And the mental potency of the forces of evil was overcome by those seeking the higher. Seeking a higher and better future. It still is amazing, though, you know, that the feeling of abandonment that it's possible to develop when one reads of the 4 months preparation of hierarchy to withdraw from human contact. And we just know there's more that's in it. It's not abandonment at all. It has to be in favor of planetary well-being. So preparations for departure were halted and renewed effort applied. Four factors lie behind the momentous happening of the release of this form of atomic energy. There are other forms. Through the medium of what is erroneously and unscientifically called the splitting of the atom. There are other factors, but you may find the following four of real interest. And so we're being given the occult realities behind the surrender of Germany and the surrender of Japan and the possibility of victory for the forces of light and those on the outer plane who represented them. So many millions died, such tremendous sacrifice offered. A major, major test for humanity, and the major villains were sent packing. That doesn't mean they won't be back and make other attempts. We don't know where they are now. Sometimes it's amusing almost, if it weren't so serious, that on Saturn is a brown spot where the evildoers are sent. Kind of a prison, I guess, and maybe a kind of rehabilitation center. Because in the last analysis, none are left behind at the great Mahapralaya. All of us are the great universal logos. And in our essence of essences, there is only good and not the complexities of self-serving evil into which the emanation found itself. Sometimes you read about people who forgive apparently unforgivable things, but they know more about the true nature of the one being forgiven, and they understand the law of karma, and they understand the inevitability of all things working out in a universe for the good. So other factors. We're talking about the splitting of the atom. Atom smashing. And DK saying, well, you don't really understand yet what actually happened. But those with the energy of the future, they overcame the forces of death and the death and enslavement of human consciousness. So what are the four factors that lie behind the momentous happening? Of that event known as the release of atomic energy. What are the factors? Now he starts. A, there was a clearly directed inflow of extraplanetary energy released by the Lords of Liberation to whom invocation had been successfully made. Now, are these extraplanetary beings or did they have access to extraplanetary energy and could direct it? Okay. Through the impact of this energy upon the atomic substance being dealt with by the investigating scientists, changes were brought about which enabled them to achieve success. Now, these, of course, are the allied teams involved in the Manhattan Project. I knew a friend of the family. He's quite brilliant, and he had been involved directly in the Manhattan Project. Interestingly, his last name was Mann. The experiments being carried forward were therefore both subjective and objective. So matter itself was affected. Matter itself was affected. Let's get that spelled right. Okay. But, of course, it was not possible under this kind of directed energy for the forces allied with the forces of evil to be enabled to achieve success, even though changes did occur in atomic substance. Okay. What else? A concerted effort was made by a number of disciples who were working in fifth and seventh ray ashrams. Those workers, you know, who will be working in the scientific C group, both fifth and seventh ray. And this enabled them to impress lesser disciples in the scientific field and help them to surmount the well-nigh insuperable difficulties with which they were confronted. So it was a blessed project. There have been, you know, movies made about that Manhattan Project effort. They're always dramatic. They show the many disappointments. They show the dangers. They show the loss of life, the frustration, and finally the success, which brought about eventually the end of the war in its last phases. So impression was another factor. We can call it then the impression. of lesser disciples. And my wild E here reproduces itself 5 times for every hit. It will be fixed. Also, now what we're dealing with here, 4 factors lie behind the momentous happening of the release of atomic energy. 4 factors. And we're learning now what those factors were. And we probably will discover that interventions have been made even during the 75 years that has passed since 1945. Sometimes we see in movies and drama how close the nations were to atomic war during the Cuban Missile Crisis, as it is called in the United States, some 60 years ago. The disciples, of course, impressing lesser disciples, the disciples were probably masters and arhats in the particular ashram in which they worked. 5th and 7th ray ashrams, and it's hard to believe that the first ray ashram, with all of its potential for destruction, was not involved. There was also a weakening of the tension which had hitherto successfully held the forces of evil together, and a growing inability of the evil group at the head of the Axis powers to surmount the incidental war fatigue. And you saw that in some of the photos and documentaries regarding Hitler. You could see him falling apart. And as he was degenerating, those in his supervision were also degenerating. So tension holds together, and they lost their point of tension, and there began to be talk of assassination of the leader, and attempts were made. But, you know, these people are protected by the Black Lodge. They have their own healing methods. They have their own advanced warning system. They can manipulate circumstances so that the instruments that they use, that is, human beings, that they use, are protected. So this degeneration of the coherence of the powers of evil proceeded. This brought about, first of all, a steady deterioration of their minds and then of their brains and nervous system. None of the men involved in the direction of the Axis effort in Europe is today normal psychologically. They are all suffering from some form or other, from some form of physical deterioration, and this has been a real factor in their defeat, though one that may be difficult for you to realize. So, you know, I remember the mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, after the news from Stalingrad came in. It was a very national kind of realization that the war had probably been lost. At least certain people understood that the war had been lost. They tried to encourage others to fight on until we see such hideous phenomena as the Volkssturm, where, you know, 11 and 12 year old boys and men in their 70s were rounded up to fight? And did they have rifles or did they have shovels? They certainly were not equipped to meet the Russian group that was coming in. They were not equipped. And it was a slaughter, of course. It is not so in the case of the Japanese, whose psychological makeup is totally different, as are their nervous systems, which are of fourth root race quality. They will be and are being defeated by physical war measures and by the destruction physically of their war potential and the death of the form aspect. So you have to know the physiology of the different combatants to understand what will defeat them. It may still be difficult for us to know the difference between the fifth root race body in its fourth subrace, its first subrace, namely, you know, the Hindu subrace, and then the Celtic and Teutonic subraces, and contrast all that with the fourth root race body, such as we would find in China and in Japan. These are real factors. So it was not a psychological deterioration. It was more a physical deterioration. Though when you look at some of the German leaders, they do look toward the end there, physically incapacitated. This destruction and the consequent release of their imprisoned souls is a necessary happening. It is the justification of the use of the atomic bomb upon the Japanese population, but only those who really see ahead and see the spiritual side of things would know that something beneficent for the Japanese had occurred through the release of their souls via the atomic bomb. So it would be looked at as fantasy by many, but DK speaks as an expert esotericist, and he says this is the justification. The actual disenslavement or liberation of the Japanese from a spiritual angle. The first use of this released energy has been destructive, but I would remind you that it has been the destruction of forms and not the destruction of spiritual values and the death of the human spirit, as was the goal of the Axis effort. There's a lot of the negative signs involved in the German and Japanese leadership. I do believe Tojo was a Capricorn. Our friend Philip Lindsay has done some research on the moon position of those in Hitler's group. Capricorn was prominent. I believe Goering was a sun in Capricorn. Hitler was moon in Capricorn. Much of the hardness and negativity, the crystallization, the impossibility of reaching these people with something better, had to do with the negative use of the Capricorn energy, which can be very hard and resistant. Forget not that all success, both good and bad, is dependent upon the sustaining of the point of tension. This point of tension involves the dynamic focusing of all mental, emotional, and physical energies at a certain point of planned activity. So here, the value of the point of tension is promoted, is discussed, and we will say here, the value of the point of tension is here. Discussed. This, by the way, is the objective of all true meditation work, you know, creating this cohesive or coherence-inducing point of tension. It is this act of tension that the German people failed. This cost them the war. Their tension broke, because the group of evil forces who were impressing the negative, you know, Piscean German people, were unable to attain the point of tension which hierarchy could reach when it was reinforced through the action of the Lords of Liberation. Obviously, the Lords of Liberation were of a still higher caliber than the general members of hierarchy who were not yet members of Shambhala. So it is with energies and forces and points of tension that we are dealing. And it's hard to conceive, isn't it, that it's a point of tension or unsuccessful sustainment of a point of tension which costs the Germans the war. Well, toward the end, we saw the disintegration and the general coherence falling apart and the distrust of Hitler and the problems between Hitler and his generals when he decided to micromanage everything having to do with the war. Then the fourth point, and we're looking at again four factors which lie behind the momentous happening of the release of this form of atomic energy. Yeah, that's what we're looking at. And we've done three. So the inflow from the Lords of Liberation and the effort made in response to the disciples, i.e. the masters of the fifth and seventh rays, to impress the lesser disciples on the outer plane, working in the scientific field, and the weakening of the point of tension in Germany. Germany was by far the worst. Now we remember that if Japan symbolically represented Maya and Italy illusion, then glamour was represented by Germany, and the glamour was much stronger than either illusion or Maya. Remember that the etheric physical plane is split and the mental plane is split between the higher and lower minds, but the astral plane is not split, and we live in an astral Buddhic solar system, and the problem is deep glamour. All right. Point D. Another factor was the constant invocative demand and the prayers, articulate and inarticulate, of humanity itself. So the esotericists of the day did their part, and so did the church people. Was that meditation? Or was that plowing on and taking a brief little nap? Excuse me. So another factor was the constant invocative demand of the prayers and the prayers of humanity. Men, impelled largely by fear and the innate mobilizing of the human spirit against slavery, something about the spirit of man which cannot stand to be enslaved, reached such a pitch of demanding energy that a channel was created which greatly facilitated the work of the hierarchy under the direct influence of the Lords of Liberation. Well, this also worked to bring through that which lay behind the successful use of the atomic energy. Successful not as it will be, which will not be in the destructive work, but successful at the time in terms of the destructive need. Okay. Now there's a bit more here. Well, more than a bit. It goes on to page 500. And then still another 200 pages in the book. So, let's take a look here. The moving northward of the sun. The release of the atomic energy and its hierarchical activation, and the race between the forces of light and darkness, and the end of the last phase of the war through the precipitation or release of atomic energy. This is the series of points that we are dealing with at this time. Now we get to point four. The release of the energy of the atom is as yet in an extremely embryonic stage. Humanity knows little of the extent or the nature of the energies which have been tapped and released. Now maybe more is now known, as there's been a lot of sophisticated development in this particle physics, and much more, I would say, is now understood. There are many types of atoms constituting the world's substance. and each can release its own type of force. This is one of the secrets which the New Age will in time reveal, but a good and sound beginning has been made. I would call your attention to the words, the liberation of energy. Now, this is in Einstein's formula, as far as that goes. It is liberation which is the keynote of the new era. Liberty, equality, fraternity, liberty at first. Just as it has ever been the keynote of the spiritually oriented aspirant. This liberation has started by the, or was started by the release of an aspect of matter and the freeing of some of the soul forces within the atom. Now, these are cryptic statements to all but the esotericist. I wonder how a director of the CERN atom smasher would regard what is said here. This has been, for matter itself, a great and potent initiation, paralleling those initiations which would liberate and release the souls of men. So the many types of energy, of atoms, each with their own type of energy. That's what we are discussing here. Each can release its own type of force, and this is one of the secrets which the New Age will reveal. So we are just even now in the infancy. Now, when the etheric planes are rediscovered and accepted, we will have entered something quite new. Ever since the Michelson-Morley experiment, which I think in the 1880s, it apparently did away with the need for the ether and consigned it to non-existence. And what are the soul forces within the atom? Well, what are the soul forces within the human atom, the planetary atom, the solar logoic atom? So we have touched some of the higher levels, considering the form of the atom. In this process of planetary initiation, humanity has carried its work as the world savior, certainly of the subhuman kingdoms, down into the world of substance and has affected those primary units of life which are, of which all forms are made. And here, the work in these tunnels where the mysteries of the particles constituting the atom are being revealed. So matter itself is being affected at this time, and we are reaching a level of understanding regarding its true constitution. And point five, then, you will now understand the meaning of the words used by so many of you in the second of the great invocations, second stanza. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. What is the saving force? The saving force is the energy which science has released into the world for the destruction, first of all, of those who continue, if they do, to defy the forces of light working through the United Nations, you know, the Allies. And then, as time goes on, the liberated energy will usher in the new civilization, the new and better world, and the finer, more spiritual conditions. the saving force will support and propel our civilization forward, or the various types of civilization. Shall we think of one civilization? For all humanity, there seem to be different aspects of it. As when we speak of the clash of civilizations, the highest dreams of those who love their fellow men can become practical possibilities through the right use of this liberated, substantial energy. This saving force has now been made available by science and my earlier prophecy substantiated. So that earlier prophecy is found on page 4. Mention of it on 498. So basically, we have to look under 497 in the book itself of the externalization of the hierarchy. And let's just see what it says, even though you won't be able to read it right now. I can read it for you. And it says here, the treatise on white magic, beginning on page 333, where the following statements appear. It might be noted that three great discoveries are imminent, and during the next two generations will revolutionize modern thought and life. One is already sensed and is the subject of experiment and investigation, the releasing of the energy of the atom. This will completely change the economic and political situation in the world, for the latter is largely dependent upon the former, politics depending on economics. You know, boiled down by Bill Clinton, you know, talking about the chances of being elected, he says, it's the economy, stupid. Well, anyway, our mechanical civilization will be simplified and an era ushered in which will be free from the incubus of money, its possession and its non-possession, and the human family will recognize universality in its status as a bridging kingdom between the three lower kingdoms of nature and the fifth, or spiritual kingdom. This will be a time and freedom for a soul. There will be a time, and freedom for a soul culture which will supersede our modern methods of education and the significance of soul powers, and the development of the superhuman consciousness will engross the attention of educators and students everywhere. And then some information about light and color. And then magic. So turn to page 333 in your esoteric treatise on white magic, and you will be able to read these things. Okay. So we're on page 498, and there's still quite a bit left, but it might be nice to finish this section, so I'll plow forward, 498. As I said above, the first use of this energy has been material destruction. This was inevitable and desirable. Old forms obstructing the good have had to be destroyed. The wrecking and disappearance of that which is bad and undesirable must ever precede the building of the good and desirable and the longed for emergence of that which is new and better. So basically it's telling us the work of the first ray does precede the work of the building second ray. And there seems to be no way to prevent that. He even talked about how the Black Lodge grabs the new themes for their own purposes before the White Lodge, or those representing the White Lodge, realize this and catch up. Fortunately, with such a disciple as Franklin Roosevelt, that catching up was possible. The constructive use of this energy and its harnessing for the betterment of humanity is its real purpose. You know, the new period of leisure for the real cultivation of the inner nature of the human being. This living energy of substance itself, etheric substance, hitherto shut up within the atom and imprisoned in these ultimate forms of life, basic forms of life, except if we consider the subatomic particles, can be turned wholly into that which is good and can bring about such a revolutionizing of the modes of human experience that from one angle alone it will necessitate and bring about an entirely new economic world structure. Just imagine, you know, we, through the use of money, we fight for the power to enlist the energies of others and have them work for us. Now, all of that with abundant energy will no longer be necessary. And naturally, the moneyed interests who have power over others at this time seek to ensure that that change does not happen. So they would like to own this atomic energy for themselves and prevent it from falling practically into the hands of those who could use it, the many human beings, for their own betterment. Well, that will not succeed, but who knows how long it will take. It lies in the hands of the United Nations, not the Axis powers, to protect this released energy from misuse and to see that its power is not prostituted to selfish ends and purely material purposes. It is a saving force and has in it the potency of rebuilding and rehabilitation, of rehabilitation and of reconstruction. Saving force. Substantial saving force. Its right use can abolish destitution. You know, the horrible scenes of poverty that we see, the dirt, the filth, the privation, bring civilized comfort, not useless luxury, to all upon our planet. Its expression in forms of right living, if motivated by right human relations, will produce beauty, warmth, color, the abolition of the present forms of disease. Now, I suppose there will be, the way he says of it, you know, other forms of disease as different aspects of the human energy system are emphasized. The withdrawal of mankind from all activities which involve living or working underground, because right now we mine precious metals and oil and coal and so forth for the sake of energy, which will not be necessary then, and will bring to an end all human slavery, which certainly now does exist, and there has been an emphasis upon unsuspected human enslavement, and will bring to an end all human slavery, all need to work or fight for possessions and things, and that will be eliminated. All need to work and fight for possessions and things, because men will have enough, sufficient, and will render possible the state which will leave man free to pursue the higher aims of the spirit. And all of this due to the release of the saving force, the substantial saving force concealed in matter. In Einstein's horoscope, there was not only the intuitive, there was the Saturn and Mercury conjunction, which really understood matter. Otherwise, he could not have presented a formula with such dramatic implications for living our life upon the physical plane. The prostituting of life to the task of providing the bare necessities. We see this now during the coronavirus. People are deprived of the usual symbolism of money, and they can't eat. They starve. They are reduced. The prostituting of life to the task of providing the bare necessities, or to make it possible for a few rich and privileged people to have too much when others have too little. And it's, you know, now it's reached a ridiculous height of discussion of even a trillionaire emerging, not just billionaires, while others get a dollar or two a day, if they work, will come to an end. Men everywhere can now be released into a state of life which will give them leisure and time to follow spiritual objectives, to realize richer cultural life, and to attain a broad mental perspective. So this is a consummation devoutly to be hoped. The release of humanity into cultivation of their higher possibilities. Yes, of course. And some of this, the battle for it, will be fought out, you know, in the Saturnian decanate of Aquarius, during which time of approximately 720 years, DK says things will be difficult. But my brothers, men will fight to prevent this. The reactionary groups in every country will neither recognize the need for nor desire this new world order, which the liberation of cosmic energy, even on this initial tiny scale, putting things in proportion, can make possible. The vested interests, the big cartels, trusts, and monopolies that controlled the past few decades preceding the World War will mobilize their resources and fight to the death to prevent the extinction of their sources of income. They will not permit, if they can help it, the passing of the control of this illimitable power, at least illimitable for our needs, into the hands of the masses to whom it rightly belongs. In other words, every human being has the right to avail them, himself, herself, themselves, of the saving force, which will greatly enhance their quality of life. The selfish interests among the big stockholders, the banking firms, and the wealthy organized churches, Catholicism, I guess, will oppose all change except insofar as it will benefit them and bring more financial gain to their coffers, as if there was a real need. But there is no need. There is simply the desire to lord it over others, to exploit them, to have power and control, and to enslave for the egoistical satisfaction it brings. Signs of this opposition can already be seen in the utterances of certain powerful men who are today encouraging a gloomy outlook in London and in Washington and elsewhere. Well, this continues to this day, and now there are billionaires, not just millionaires. And the discrepancy between the money in the possession of the extremely rich and the extremely poor only widens. The gap widens, and the rich feel, the extremely rich, simply feel they're smart and entitled to these things. Some do offer assistance of a charitable kind. Others simply think it's their right and they go on accumulating in the most selfish manner. So gloom pervades the anticipations of some of these extremely wealthy individuals. The Vatican, that wealthy and reactionary ecclesiastical organization, at least way back then, before John the 23rd, and especially him, has already expressed its disfavor, because that church knows, as do all the vested and moneyed interests, that their days are numbered, provided humanity governs its decisions during the next 50 years by the idea of the greatest good of the greatest number, which is a kind of an occult truism, the greatest good of the greatest number. Obviously, then, the Vatican, as it was then, especially, did not care for the greatest good of the greatest number. They wished to enhance their particular sect. It's a broad sect. It's all over the world. And there are some Protestant groups that fall under the same ill-conceived policy. Well, it worked in the past. You know, the people could be kept down, they could be kept ignorant, but now with the internet being what it is, this is no longer possible, and people will demand their fair share, which is only right, and will be resisted, you know, the so-called fight to the last ditch, as DK describes it. World decisions must therefore in the future be based upon a steady determination to further right human relations and to prevent selfish control, financial or ecclesiastical, or I would say military also, by any group of men anywhere in any country. So this is why DK is so against, and the hierarchy so against, totalitarianism as a form of government. We believe the determination of Great Britain, the United States, and Canada, who are in possession of the secrets, is along these lines. Now, of course, came the sharing with Russia and the execution of the so-called spies, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, you know, conveying the atomic secrets to Russia. They were executed. I remember being a boy at that time and following all the furor that went on around that. And now, even now, some very unworthy, untrustworthy nations have these secrets. The possession of these secrets by North Korea, for instance, or maybe, you know, by Iran and so forth, will be, or is, a great danger to the world. But even the greater countries, if they fall in their morality, pose a great danger if they possess these secrets. It's no easy matter to be a member of hierarchy, or to be the Christ and try to bring not exactly infant humanity, but certainly immature humanity through these imbalances in a safe manner. Well, okay, look, we have one more paragraph here. These few suggestions will give you much food for thought and real ground for happy, confident, and forward thinking. Okay, and we're at page 500, another 200 pages to go in this excellent collection of essays. Then I'll have to go back to the very beginning of the book where I did not begin at the beginning. Maybe another 60 pages there have to be taken care of. Organize now for the goodwill work. The future of the world lies in the hands of the men of goodwill and in those who have unselfish purpose everywhere. Future of the world lies in their hands. Is it hard to conceive? Does it seem a negligible power, this goodwill? Not according to the Tibetan. The release of energy will eventually make money, as we know it, of no moment whatsoever. Money has proved itself, owing to man's limitations, a producer of evil and the sower of dissension and discontent in the world. You know, the envy that goes along with this and the monetization of all human values, even to the point of discussing what's he worth, what's she worth, and trying to put this in terms of money. This new released energy can prove itself a saving force for all mankind, releasing from poverty, ugliness, you know, the garbage heaps. If you've seen those things, they are appalling. The young children sent out there to salvage rotten food. Releasing from poverty, ugliness, degradation, slavery, and despair. It will destroy the great monopolies, take the curse out of labor, and open the door into that golden age for which all men wait. It kind of reminds you of the Satya Yuga, you know, the golden age. And the Dvarapa, Treta, and Kali Yugas, different times, based on the number 432. These things are inevitable, but we are in for the opportunity of a considerable lift out of our misery if we will only cease having to learn the hard way. It will level all the artificial layers of modern society, you know, maybe the caste system and its adaptations in various countries such as England and even in America, where money determines caste. It will level all the artificial layers of modern society and liberate men from the constant anxiety and grueling toil, which has been responsible for so much disease and death. By the sweat of thy brow, thou shalt earn thy bread. Well, the time for that is over, and the cultivation of higher culture is imminent. When these new and better conditions are established, then men will be free. So naturally, we connect the liberty with Uranus and the release of atomic energy. All of them are related in preparing for the saving force, providing the saving force. Then men will be free and to live and move in beauty and to seek the lighted way, to live and move in beauty. Master Moria, with beauty, thou hast the light. So Indeed, the hierarchy has great benevolence intended for humanity and the other kingdoms of nature. But not yet has the release been managed as it should be, and it's still a great threat and crazy, egocentrical megalomaniacs threaten the world and themselves with their atomic substitution for real soul power. It's an egotistical power is nothing like real power, but they are too immature to know it. Well, okay. So we've come down to page 500 or so, and we're going to talk about some very important things, stages in the externalization of the hierarchy. Some people have wanted me to really have started the whole story right here. But I feel, you know, if it's in the book, it's of value and it gives you the proper buildup. So I'll go back and try to find the the place where we began this. This is program number 55. It's a longer one. And basically, this is page 500. And we'll come down to where we're talking about the stages in the externalization of the hierarchy. My comments are simply, you know, based on what strikes me as important, and other things will strike you as important. And one is, and so basically we're finishing a 2-hour and approximately 30 minutes program. And we have gone from 488 to 500. And we begin on program 56, and we don't know how long it will occur. I mean, how long it will be and when it will occur. I'm not sure tonight. I've been at this quite a while, but maybe, who knows? One has to seize the moment, right? So I want to thank you for getting this far and thinking along with me and perhaps having some very enlightened thoughts. And it's all of our thoughts together that count here as we try to become members of the new group of world servers. We try. And we try to move on to initiate status so we can truly be members of the spiritual hierarchy and empowered to be of greater value. So, as I say, lots of love and many blessings. And this will be to stop the recording at this point, and we will move forward.